You are now listening to the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. As always, I am your host, Daniel Lee, or Photos by DOEE. This week, we're going to be discussing the balance between skill and fun, personal updates and news stories as always. So to get right into it, personal updates. Haven't really been shooting much because I have been trying to sort of remodel or revitalize my websites, including the photographyenthusiast.com from the backside sort of thing behind the scenes. If anyone listening had viewed my website, they may have found that it could be quite slow to load at times. That was mainly due to what's called the TTFB, the time to first byte, the time between when your browser requests the information and the server sort of sends it. This can often be multiple factors. It could be your host, it could be your plugins on your website, your domain, DNS manager, like whoever is your DNS provider. There's so many different variables that it could be, but I know sometimes it would be insanely long to load, other times it would be quick. I believe the main issue for that was a Sashay plugin that I used, a cache plugin. Don't even know which is the correct one, Sashay or cache. I think it's, yeah, who knows. But either way, found that was the issue. I made some changes to pretty much everything, Mr. Meowpus, Photos by DOEE and TPE. And after that, yep, loads beautifully now. So, well, at least I hope it does. If you're still using my website and you notice if you view it more than once and it's still each time very slow, then yeah, please let me know. I'd like to know so that I can try and work on it and make sure it loads faster. But otherwise, that's pretty much, you know, what I had spent a good week or more doing and sort of trying to take photos, but not too much. Just been very tired from work. It's a lot longer job. And, you know, personally, I'm just trying to get more in shape as well. So I'm pretty tired and sore from that all the time as well. I may do an episode. I know I'm going to definitely do a post about how to speed up your WordPress website if you are a photographer and use WordPress, because, you know, the ways that I found make a significant difference. So I think it could help a lot of people, especially if you're someone that wants to build a photography portfolio and you're not sure if you should go with Squarespace or you should go Wix or if you should just straight up, you know, do WordPress, which I think is better. But, you know, I might do an episode. If you do would like to hear that, please let me know on Twitter. So yeah, I can definitely put some more effort into that and definitely get something out in that relation. Lockdowns here are still going, getting more serious. I think we hit 466 cases today. You know, a lot of people keep going out, but I don't think that's really the main, you know, this is all speculation, but we did have those anti-lockdown protests like pretty much exactly 2 to 3 weeks ago. So I think that has just sort of spread everything. That, you know, people that went to that, there was apparently someone that had COVID there. So that's spread and spread and spread. But yeah, enough on the COVID stuff. The last piece of personal updates, which to me, you know, it's not photography related, but it's really exciting for me. So in a personal sense, work sense, I guess, personal development sense. So I got an email from my uni, you know, I meant to be graduating next month, but then with our COVID cases so high, I know I definitely won't be able to go to WA without getting, you know, I don't think I could even go, even if I did isolation. They pretty much close their borders to anyone unless you have some very valid reason, which a graduation wouldn't be. So I've had to postpone my graduation again to February. And if I can't attend that one, then they just force me to take my certificate by mail and I don't actually get to have a ceremony. But anyway, the point of it was I got an email saying I have a new document from my uni through this thing. It's a testimonial, and I had never heard of that word before, so I didn't even know what it was. So I'm, you know, confused as hell. What is this? Thinking maybe it's some invoice for my hex debt or help debts, you know? So anyway, managed to log on finally and see what it was. Once I did log on, I was so shocked and so surprised. So I actually received a sort of digital copy of my degree, which has a seal on there and everything, which you can show to your employers. Previously, they would only offer a completion certificate, which I did get, which pretty much just says, you know, this person has completed their course. And you can contact our uni if you have any questions because they're yet to have their graduation ceremony. Whereas this is like your actual proper degree. So just, you know, I never felt like I actually graduated because I still didn't have it. So now that I have it, it feels so more real. And honestly, I was quite emotional about it because, you know, I was the type of person that, you know, was expected to never even be able to enter uni, let alone graduate or pass it. And then also the fact that, you know, my mom, who passed away, you know, what, nearly 17 years ago, can't even keep count now. But she, you know, she really wanted me to be able to get into uni, but you know, based on my high school grades, which were like D, E, that kind of stuff, because I hated high school. I think it was a waste of time, still think it's a waste of time. She thought I wouldn't be able to get in. She knew I had the smarts to do it, but I just hated high school. I really, really hated it. So I didn't bother putting in any effort. Especially I didn't have a computer at that time, so I would do IT classes, and I would literally just sit there and look at wrestling news, and I would look at GTA. That's all I would do, or video game news. I would just look, browse the internet like what you would do at home. But because I couldn't do it at home, I did that at school. That and mess around, make people's life hell, that kind of stuff. But you know, high school, it's horrible for everyone. So people make your life hell, you make their life hell. It's pretty much a full circle, you know what I mean? Then you see each other 2-3 years after high school and you act like your best friends again. You know, you never had any issues, but you know, you just mature. It's like kids got egos at that age, you know, hormones or whatever. They just want to assert dominance, be a certain way. That's why I think, you know, kids, I don't know, maybe kids wouldn't like it at the moment with COVID and homeschooling. I know I would personally love online. I like doing working from home. So I figure maybe if I had done high school from home, but could attend, you know, virtually, I would love it way more. Play games on my lunch break, don't have to see people. Perfect. But yeah, that's it. So I guess we'll get right into the news. So first in the news, DJI have finally released their ultralight mini SE drone in the United States, and it will be costing $300. So apparently this drone has been already available in other countries like Australia, UK, Asia, that kind of stuff, but it hadn't come to the US yet. But now that has changed. At only 249 grams, DJI are labeling this as being almost as light as a smartphone. It has a 30 minute flight time, and its camera is capable of 2.7K with a 3-axis gimbal. It actually has the same shell as the Mini 2, so in terms of wind resistance, that kind of stuff, it's very similar to that. And you know, at the price range it is and what it offers, it's most likely probably just trying to compete with brands like Vivitar. I personally don't have a drone yet. I do want one, but I don't know, it just hasn't seemed like something that's a priority to me because of the limitations of where you can fly it as well. Here, you know, you can fly it in the city, well, not so much in the city, but they've got loopholes. You know, technically you can fly it, say, in this area, but you're not allowed to fly it over people, which means there's always people around, which means you can't fly it. Either way, it's something I definitely will get one day, but I always tend to prioritize stuff like lenses and bodies over stuff like drone, which I feel like would be more niche use and not something I would use on a daily basis like everything else. Next up is TT Artisan has announced their 50mm f1.4 for Sony E, Nikon Z, Canon RF, and Leica L mounts. So this will be only $232. It's suited to 60 megapixels, sensors up to 60 megapixels, made up of 10 elements in 8 groups. It has a total of 12 aperture blades or diaphragm blades, which is quite a lot compared to most lenses. Minimum focus distance of 50 centimeters, a 49mm filter thread. It weighs between 429 and 459 grams depending on which lens mount version you get. There are sample photos in the Petapixel article and doesn't look bad. Like, you can tell with the rendering, they've gone more on the rendering, like making it look more interesting, unique, rather than one of those, say, Sigma lenses is just all about ultimate sharpness. I don't know if this is the type of lens I would get because, you know, personally, I don't really like manual lenses. I like everything automatic in camera anyway. So all the dials and all that kind of stuff's not really for me. And manual focus lens especially, I'm pretty bad. You know, even with focus peaking, I find it kind of annoying. I still prefer, depending on what I'm using it for, to have autofocus. Like macro lenses and that kind of stuff, I pretty much use them in manual focus most of the time or single shot. But still, you know, if I can get autofocus, I'd still always, that would be my preference. But really comes down to what you want. If you don't mind manual focus, you're happy to manual focus and rely on peaking, then yeah, perfectly fine for you. Next up, the one and only Sigma has announced their 150 to 600mm f5 to 6.3 sport lens for the E and L mount. Now they're noting that this is the company's first ultra telephoto zoom lens that Sigma says has been developed from the ground up specifically for full frame mirrorless cameras. So that means all their other zooms were based off DSLR design. So it'll be interesting how, you know, good this one is in real world performance once we get a bit more reviews. From the ones I have seen, it is quite good, but I didn't, yeah, really get the time to post them on TPE, been busy with other stuff. Sigma do say this is meant to be sort of an uncompromising in performance, so no compromise. This is in performance, it's going to be the best it can be. It's got a weight of 2.1 kilos, 24 elements in 15 groups, a minimum focus distance of 58 centimeters, and that's at the wide end, and a minimum focus distance of 280 centimeters at the long end. Sigma have said this is meant to have pro level autofocus that can keep up with anything you need it to. and it has around 4 stops of IBIT or IS, like or OS, whichever they call it, image stabilization and a focus limiter. It's going to be releasing for around $1,500 US in late August. If I had a Sony or L-mount body still, which is what this is coming out on, to be honest, I'd probably go for the Tamron still, just because even though it's a bit shorter, the weight of it is lighter, and I always find Tamron autofocus, not always, but Ivan, they do seem to be a bit more reliable when it comes to autofocus. I believe I watched a review of this lens with Dustin Abbott or someone, and I did remember him saying that autofocus did have a bit of troubles in certain scenarios. And I'm sure most people would use this lens for stuff like birding, so really you'd want to be able to trust the autofocus on the lens, so that's where it would be a bit of a concern for me. I am curious why this didn't release on Nikon or Canon. You know, all their previous lenses haven't, but we're really close to that 3-year mark where the Z mount and the RF mount came out. So if, say, early next year to mid next year sort of thing, anywhere between quarter one to quarter three, if another Sigma or Tamron lens comes out and it doesn't come out in RF and Z mount, I'll be very, very interested. Otherwise, if you are looking for a lens in this range, you know, compared to Sony's 200 to 600, this is cheaper. You get the extra 50 millimeters. Weight wise, I think it's a bit heavier, but it was very similar. But otherwise, you know, could be a good option for you. Now, this one I was a bit reluctant to mention due to the controversy surrounding it, but oh well, you know. This article is about, is Apple actually going to snoop on your photos? So pretty sure almost everyone would have read about what initially seemed is that Apple's just going to be looking at all your photos no matter what they are. So what it is that in order to be able to stop child sexual, I can't even remember what the exact term for it is, pretty much child porn, they just want to be able to stop child porn, and they want to be able to scan your photos to make sure you don't have any child porn. So I think it's unanimous that everyone agrees any kind of child exploitation material should be banned, and those people should be punished, you know, full extent of the law. There has been, as I mentioned, a lot of controversy, a lot of outcry. Not so much about Apple wanting to stop pedophiles, but more about the fact that, you know, if they start scanning for this now, there's nothing to stop them from scanning just your personal stuff later on or that kind of thing. Pretty much another privacy concern sort of thing. From what I, you know, read it at first, it did sort of come off as if that they're just going to be scanning all photos, but apparently this is targeted at iCloud users. So if you don't use iCloud, this wouldn't affect you. What happens is when you upload photos to iCloud, they are scanned against a government database pretty much to identify child sex material. You know, explicit content checks, they take place on devices known to Apple to belong to a child under 13 through iCloud family sharing. So if you're 13 and over, your photos aren't scanned. And if your photos connected, photo library will have a unique number, like a hash number, assigned to each photo. If that number matches a known child sexual assault material or something, CSAM hash will be added to a database with your iCloud account. If you have too many photos of this type, your account may be disabled and reported to the authorities. You have a choice on whether or not you want this technology to run on your phone. You can decide not to use iCloud to store your photos or opt out of family sharing for your children if you're uncomfortable with it. Now, this is just my guess and speculation, but I reckon this would either be, you know, be due to them preventing any future lawsuits or any future publicity issues that they might have based on people who have been using iCloud for this stuff. They may have, you know, flagged an increased amount of users that were using iCloud to store these kind of material, and before they can get, you know, bad press about it, they take proactive action sort of thing before it gets out there. My main reason for thinking this is like how Tumblr believed they were fined or in a lot of trouble over child porn being hosted on their servers on Tumblr sites. So what they did is they just banned all not safe for work content from their platform and introduced algorithms. It didn't matter even if it was like a, you know, consenting adult or a photographer posting, you know, boudoir, whatever you call it, nude photos sort of thing of their models, not allowed to post it at all. So, because I believe they got banned from the App Store at one stage because of that. So I kind of see this is what Apple is doing, just trying to prevent that situation happening to them. But as I mentioned, pure speculation, could be any reason they could be wanting to do that. They could be wanting to steal people's, you know, information, monitor your phone even more. Who knows? That's not me, not my place to question, not my place to jump on any bandwagons, just simply reporting it as it is. So that is it for the news. One other thing I'll quickly add before I end that, actually, wasn't going to include this one, but I won't put a link to it. It's pretty easy to find. So the latest digital camera global market share has been released as well, which, you know, always creates some arguments. Without any surprise, you have Canon at number one with 47.9%. So they've actually gone up by 2.5%. Sony have a 22.1% market share with that's gone up 1.9%. Nikon have a 13.7% share, which is down 4.9%, which is pretty crazy because I remember Nikon used to be much higher. They used to be around 24%. They used to be like almost half of what Canon would be. Now Sony's pretty much taken everything from them. Then you got Fuji at 5.6%, dropped 0.3%, and also the same for Panasonic, who are at 4.4% and dropped 0.3%. Canon is doing really well there. I remember years ago they wanted to reach 50% market share. They are getting closer to that. Even though the market is shrinking, they're still getting a bigger piece of that pie. And I honestly think if they keep releasing these amazing bodies, amazing cameras, they probably will get more. I just hope, you know, Nikon can sort of stabilize and not lose any more ground. Maybe get some more ground back off Sony, but who knows, you know. As long as they stay in business and nothing happens to them, that's just the main thing there. Now, definitely over to the main topic. So the balance between skill and fun. So I've been doing photography for nearly a decade now, so a lot has changed over that time. September, which is next month, will officially be 10 years. It's pretty easy to keep track because originally when I first started photography, I got my camera right before, I count it as when I got my first DSLR. So that was right before the Royal Show, annual thing we have in Perth, which is in September. And it was a few months after I started going out with my girlfriend as well. So it's pretty easy to keep track. So yeah, 10 years, pretty crazy. But you know, one thing that you can expect, especially the longer you take photos, is improvement, which, you know, not to blow my own horn, but I definitely think I have improved. If you look at the photos I post, like even just post one on Twitter today, people said to post one from when you start till now, and I posted and there's definitely a difference. Now, over time, your style and interest change, which I've discussed before, as well as, you know, reflecting on your photography, which is important to do to sort of determine your growth and how, you know, appreciate where you've come, how far you've come and where you can grow to. Due to lockdowns and me not being able to really go out and shoot and do what I want to, you know, I've had a lot of time to really look back at my older photos and once again, you know, reflect and make me miss the simpler times, which is when I first started taking photos. One thing I noticed, and I'm sure many of you will, is that, you know, when you learn and the longer you do photography, often the less you will take photos. So for example, you know, I could be walking down the street. Every single thing on that street would catch my interest and I'd be taking photos of everything, even if it didn't look that interesting later on and end up deleting. I'd still just shoot everything. Whereas these days, you know, I'm very, very selective with what I photograph. I won't even attempt it if I think it won't even be even 50% interesting kind of thing. I've been told that this is more that your eye, you know, your photographic eye becomes more selective and artistic, and it's actually a good thing. I do agree with this, you know, because as I mentioned, when I first started out, just photograph everything, but my knowledge improved, that sort of stuff, and got better in that sense. But at the same time, I do think it is a bad thing because I honestly miss that period of my photography. Don't know if you've ever done that with like a game, a movie series, any of that kind of stuff. You just wish you could go into it fresh again and not know what you know. So, you know, if it's a movie, you want to be able to surprise by the ending. A game, you want to not know the map off by heart. And with photography, you just want to have that feeling of discovering photography, trying out these lenses, how this looks, how that looks. It's, you know, really fun. It's a really amazing experience. You know, with, as I mentioned, being now that I'm so selective, and even if I visit a location, I know exactly what I can shoot rather than just take a photo of everything to see what I like later on. One fatal error I've made is just I sort of focus on more than one subject rather than the lighting. So, you know, photography, it's meant to be all about capturing light and not, you know, the subject. It's always said that you're better off having a more interesting lighting setup. So say the nicest mountain with all that kind of stuff, but very flat lighting, just middle of the day, 12 p.m. That will be the most boring photo. Whereas if you have just a plain empty field, but then you have, you know, a very strong backlight or something, some crazy interesting lighting that makes it such something look more unique, it's always meant to be the more interesting photo rather than that interesting subject. And I feel like over time, I've become more about the subject than I have about the light. I also don't really shoot casually. So I try to more, but you know, I'm sure there are many people who still manage to shoot casually, not just treat every photo like it has to be an artistic masterpiece. But I don't, you know, technically do that, but you know, I used to just take photos of everything, all food I eat, everywhere I go, just casual shots, me and my girlfriend, that kind of stuff. Walk somewhere, looks nice, even though, you know, I would never post online, still take photos of it and save the JPEG for later on. I used to do that a lot, even edit those photos as well, just so I can keep, you know, that skill there, but I just stopped doing it. I went back to look at old photos. I went back pretty much to when I got my original 6D and looked at all the photos I was taking with the 60 onwards, the 60, 60 Mark II, the A7 Mark III. And I did notice back then I did take a lot more photos, pretty much take photos of everything. I'd have street, cityscape, product, people, you know, portraits, that kind of stuff. I pretty much try everything. I never wanted to limit myself, but then it's often said that, you know, you should focus on one to two genres and be the master of them and rather than a jack of all trades. So I decided to push my focus just to focusing on cityscapes and still life only, which I did. But I feel like at the same time, I got a bit bored of it, you know, because I'm the type, I'm not looking to become a professional photographer. So in a way, there's no reason for me to sort of focus on one genre. Once again, not to blow my own horn, but I feel like I'm pretty good at cityscapes. Like, no matter how long if I take a break from a cityscape, I can still come back to it and know how to edit it, know how to shoot it. Something I've done so much, that's why I like to shoot other stuff, just so I can try that out and see how good I can do at that. And then, you know, obviously, as I mentioned, I can see where I started to focus on it and then I started to take less photos because of that. But also, you know, with COVID starting, I didn't go out to eat as many different places, didn't visit as many places. So it does make it harder to take photos just pretty much everywhere you go. Also, I stopped carrying my camera everywhere with me, you know, back problems as well. So it got tiring to be able to do that. That's where the M50 can come in now once I can actually go out places again. But, you know, depending on what you want to achieve in photography, even if you do want to be a professional photographer, I still think it's good to be able to, you know, portraits of your day job or whatever, your professional portrait photographer, still make the time, you know, when you go out to lunch with your significant other, your friends, your kids, whatever, just take photos of them as well. Try and create art out of everything. Don't just try and put yourself in that narrow window of only shooting that one typical thing. Because, you know, with anything, as soon as you stop doing it for fun and you make it into something more serious, it can easily become a chore. I'm that type of person. It became a chore, you know? You just try to, like, never give up and never give up your creativity as well. So what I mean by that is, you know, as I mentioned, when you first start, you're interested in everything. Try to keep that going as long as you can. Even if your eye becomes more selective, still try and keep up with the creativity. Because in all honesty, you know, you get locations that everyone shoots from. Everyone shoots from that same location. And I used to do that too when I first started, but I would actually challenge myself to say everyone shoots dead on in front of the Sydney Opera House. I would always try and find the most strangest location, obscure location where no one had taken it from that angle. Even though it's in the same vicinity as everyone else's photo, I just get that slight different change to my composition, slight different view, and I have a different twist on it. And I always used to try and do that with everything. But I don't know why I stopped doing that. I just pretty much did what everyone did and more relied on my editing to look different or lighting to look different. When really, if you're growing, your composition should be different, your lighting should be different, and your editing should be different. Should be growing in all areas, whereas I grew in the technical sense, but I didn't grow in the creative sense, which is where it bothers me every day. Because I love photography, I love doing it, it's one of my favorite hobbies, but these days I just got so bored of it, you know, that's why I'm playing games more, I'm exercising instead, which, you know, isn't a bad thing, but I just need to get back to that creative sense. But, you know, as I said, with lockdown probably lasting the rest of the year, in all honesty, I can't really do as much about it until then, but maybe that's, you know, when I do my review of 2020. One and goals for 2022 is going to be to go back to that, to forget focusing on two genres and to start shooting as much as I possibly can. So, you know, fact is, if you're creative enough, you can make anything look interesting. Someone could give you a mop if you, you know, do some composites with it, you know, have it floating in the air or something, proper crazy lighting behind it, make it look like the best mop in the world. Doesn't matter. If you know what you're doing, you can make anything look interesting. So just need to get to that point where you can learn and do that. I hope there's someone out there that's been shooting as long as me that has these same sentiments and this, maybe they can relate to it. Who knows? Maybe I'm just the laziest, worst photographer that's been shooting for 10 years. Who knows? But either way, I hope you enjoyed this. This is the wind up, obviously. So as always, you can find me at thephotographyenthusiast.com. All my social links are in the show notes, especially if you're listening on Spotify. I don't think on Apple it lets you click on them, which is pretty annoying. Otherwise, yeah, TPE. thephotographyenthusiast.com. You can find all my personal stuff there, as well as photosbydlee.com. I'm very active on Twitter. I try to be active on the TPE Twitter account, but I tend to use my Mr. Me Outputs a lot more. Otherwise, thank you very much for listening. Stay safe and take care. See ya.